Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation of Alexander at the 12th Hour in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is January 18, 2017, it is Shabbat 21, 2020. We will start our first service today with a song entitled Sweet Peace, the Gift of Yahweh's Love. There comes to my heart one sweet strain, a glad and a joyous refrain. I sing it again and again, sweet peace, the gift of your love. Peace, peace, sweet peace, wonderful gift from above. A wonderful, wonderful peace. Sweet peace, the gift of Yahshua. Through Yahshua the cross peace was made. My death, my death was all paid. No further foundation is laid for a peace, the gift of the Lord. Peace, peace, sweet peace, wonderful gift from above. Wonderful, wonderful peace, sweet peace, the gift of Yahshua. When Yahshua, Yahshua I had crowned, my heart this peace did abound. In him the rich blessing I found. Sweet peace, the gift of Yahshua. Peace, peace, sweet peace, wonderful gift from above. Oh, wonderful, wonderful peace. Sweet peace, the gift of Yahshua. Yahshua for peace I have died, and as I keep close to his side, there's nothing but peace that we try. Sweet peace, the gift of Yahshua. Peace, peace, sweet peace, wonderful gift from above. Oh, wonderful, wonderful peace. Sweet peace, the gift of Yahshua. The congregation of Yahweh in the symbol of a woman, Revelation 12. And there appeared a great wonder in the heaven, this is part one, a woman clothed with the sun, and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. And she being a child cried, travailing in the birth, and pain to be delivered. And there appeared another wonder in the heaven, and behold, a great red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns, and 7 crowns upon his heads. And his tail drew a third part of the stars of heaven, and did cast them onto the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman which was clothed, which was ready to be delivered, for to devour her child as soon as it was born. And she brought forth a man-child, who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up unto Yahweh and unto his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she had a place prepared to Yahweh, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. Revelation 12, 1 to 6. Okay, now who is that 1,203 score days? That's 1,260 years. Mathematically, that equates into 3.5 years, 42 months, or a day for a year, 1,260 years. That 1,260 years applies to the Dark Ages, 538 A.D. to 1798, the Catholic Inquisition. That's when the popes were in charge of the world's governments, church and state. Note that the objects as shown in the vision were in heaven, not on the earth. Therefore, whatever these symbols may imply, they may be of a heavenly origin. Again, note that her only clothing is the sun, and that her crown is composed solely of the 12 stars. Observe that she is not standing on the moon, for the Revelator says that she had the moon under her feet. We must carefully study the character of these symbols, for thus only can we learn their significance. Also mark that she was to be delivered of a man-child, that the same was caught up unto Yahweh and unto his throne. For it is an admitted fact that the child was the Yahshua, the Messiah, who ascended on the high after his resurrection, Mark 16:19. For the symbol being of the heavenly origin, the woman cannot represent Mary, the mother of Yahshua. Thus she denotes the congregation woman that was to bring forth or into which Yahshua was to be born. Thus John in the vision was looking back beyond the birth of the Yahshua. It has been taught by some that the woman is a symbol of the Christian church, call it Christian church, the Apostolic Nazarene church. Now I have a new definition and an interpretation for that word Christian. We know that that's a pagan term, meaning Yahshua's followers. Okay, because Christ is in the on the front of this suffix that comes out, the I-A-N, showing that they're followers of the Yahshua. That's what Christian means in the Greek, in the Hebrew, I mean in the Greek, Orthodox. It means followers of Jesus Christ. Now, you know who those followers, those Gentiles, you know why those Gentiles came to be converted to the apostolic congregation? Because they were brethren. They were kinfolks. They were bloodline kinfolks. They were those that were scattered among the 10 tribes. That were the 10 tribes scattered among the Assyrians. A lot of those had made them, they made their way back to Jerusalem of the 10 tribes. After they had intermingled, after the 10 tribes in the north had intermingled their seed with the Assyrians, after they went into captivity in 721 B.C., then they came about to be converted unto the apostolic congregation of the Jews. Now, Jews is a derogatory term used for Judah, the lawgiver. And 11 of the apostles were Judaites. Iscariot was not a Judaite. He was kicked out. He was purged out, leaving 11. And Matthias apparently took his place, but he was also kicked out. And Paul took his place. He ended up being the 12th apostle. Now, Paul was from the tribe of Benjamin, but the other 11 were from the tribe of Judah. Now, get that. Benjamin is the doorkeeper for Judah. Paul was the doorkeeper for Judah. Paul opened up the door to the Gentiles, he being a Benjamite. though he was of the cabinet of Judah. He was the 12th one, made up the 12th cabinet member of Judah, a quorum for 12, meaning government. Okay. It has been taught by some that the woman is a symbol of the apostolic congregation of the Nazarenes. And that Yahshua being the Nazarene, he was of the tribe of Judah. And that the moon under her feet is to denote the Mosaic dispensation or sacrificial ceremonial system that had passed away, and being clothed with the sun to mean the glory of the gospel and the new dispensation. According to the following, these claims prove incorrect. If the woman represents the apostolic congregation of the disciples, then the anointed ministers and prophets of that congregation, then it has to represent a kingdom. So, the apostolic congregation represented the kingdom of grace that was born at the cross. The kingdom of grace came forward after Yahshua's resurrection. He set up the kingdom of grace. You go to Zechariah chapter 6 about those two brass mountains. You go to the two brass mountains. The one on the left, the brass mountain on the left, represents the kingdom of grace, belongs to the apostolic regime. The one on the right belongs to the antitypical apostolic regime in our day, with the house of David, the tribe of Judah, the lawgiver, in charge of it. So the tribe of Judah, the lawgiver, is in charge of the first brass mountain, representing the kingdom of grace that Yahshua set up with his apostles. And the second brass mountain there in Zechariah 6 represents, again, the apostolic congregation, antitypical apostolic congregation of the Judah of the house of David, called the Kingdom of Glory. Kingdom of Grace, Kingdom of Glory. The Kingdom of Grace slipped away for a while and reemerged. After 2,000-year hiatus, the kingdom of grace reemerged in our day in the form of the kingdom of glory, represented by as an antitype of Solomon's kingdom that he set up after David's death. When Solomon set up the kingdom of glory in the type, it was at Jerusalem. And it became one of the seven wonders of the world. Typical. Type of the kingdom of glory. Now when the Judean people came out of captivity in 535 B.C. out from under Nebuchadnezzar's Babylon's rule, they came out of Babylon, came back and rebuilt Jerusalem. That was the kingdom of grace. That was a type for the kingdom of grace that the apostles set up at the cross. But the kingdom that we set up today, this kingdom of glory, is an antitypical kingdom of Solomon, and a type of that. So, the plot thickens, folks. It gets deeper as we go along. If the woman represents the apostolic Nazarene congregation of the apostles, kingdom of grace, how could the same woman travail in birth with the Yahshua? Talking about the congregation of the Pharisees. Okay. Supposedly, that woman represented the house of Israel. And when she conceived the man-child, she was the woman that represented the Pharisees and the Sadducees. But the fact that Sadducees refused to accept her son, when he became of age at 30 years old, they refused to accept him, so they were rejected. Pharisees and Sadducees were rejected as being the representatives here on earth of the kingdom of grace. So Yahshua had to go out and personally by the seaside and other places and choose him 12 apostles. And to take the place of the Pharisees and Sadducees. In other words, the Pharisees and Sadducees refused to believe, they refused to accept the Son, they refused to be born again. And by doing that, they rejected their own salvation and caused the whole Jewish nation to come to an end of the Old Testament. That's what brought the Jewish nation to a close by the rejection of the Messiah. Brought the whole 4,000 years worth of heritage to a close at the cross. Okay, now let us continue. It says that if we say that she, the woman, represents the Jewish congregation, how could she fly into the wilderness and remain there from 538 to 1798, a 1260-year period prophesied there in Daniel 7:25? Time, time, and a half time. There you have it in the apostolic dispensation. Question mark. If the moon under her feet in the indicates of the end of the Mosaic sacrificial system, why did it not end before the birth of Yahshua? Since the moon stood under her feet before he was born, if it had ended that at that time, or could it have been a symbol of the death of Yahshua? If her garment of the sunlight is a symbol of the gospel and the apostolic dispensation, that's after the cross, how could the congregation woman be clothed with 8 years before the gospel dispensation began? Having been clothed with it before the child was born, which one of the two churches, Jewish or Christian, gave birth unto the Messiah? If it were the Jewish congregation, then how could the light with which she was clothed be applied unto the apostolic congregation? If these questions cannot be answered, then we are obliged to go deeper into the subject. For the idea advanced that the woman is a symbol of the apostolic congregation of the Nazarene, the followers of the Yahshua only, and the moon of the Jewish ceremonial system proves incorrect, for the apostolic congregation of the Nazarene by the disciples was founded about 31 A.D. Now, what was 31 A.D.? When Yahshua was about 33 and a half years old, or not earlier than 27 A.D., at which time Yahshua began to preach at the age of 30. Being about 30 years of the age, it says, therefore the symbol points back at least 31 years before the beginning of the apostolic congregation, for the woman's congregation of the apostles was travailing in birth and pain to be delivered. Thus it was that the Jewish congregation that brought forth the Son of Yahweh and not the apostolic congregation, therefore she, the Jewish church, being with child, cried, travailing in birth and pain to be delivered. That is, the promise was made unto Israel that the Messiah was to be born through that nation by that particular congregation, woman. For the old dragon, knowing the channel through which the child was to come, closely watched with the intention of destroying the promised one as soon as he was born. It was then that the dragon, by the hand of Herod, slew all the children that were in Bethlehem and all the coasts thereof, hoping to do away with the coming king. See Matthew 2:16. For the evidence proves that the symbol of the woman takes in both periods. B.C. and A.D. Therefore, as the moon was under her feet before the birth of Yahshua, it must be a symbol of a period of time which had preceded the Jewish church. As the woman was clothed with the sun before she brought forth the child, it is evident that the symbol clothed with the sun was fulfilled before the birth of Yahshua. If the moon is symbolical, then the symbol of the sun must be the main object, for the moon depends on the sun for light, and the woman was clothed with the moon. Were clothed with the sun. Thus, the sun and the moon must be taken into consideration. In Genesis 1:16, we are told that the sun and the moon are to rule the day and the night. The sun, therefore, must denote a period into which Elohim's congregation has been given great light, and the moon must be a symbol of the preceding period, for the great light cannot be the Gospel of Yahshua and the New Testament. Neither can the moon represent the ceremonial system under the Jewish economy, for the woman was clothed with the sun and the moon was under her feet. While the ceremonial system was yet in existence, for the child was born after the woman had been clothed with the sun. Yahshua himself, by eating the Passover just before his crucifixion, established the fact that the ceremonial law was still in existence 34 years after his birth. See Matthew 26:18-21. If the above statement is correct, then we must find two such periods that would perfectly fit the symbol. The first is the one before the Bible came into the existence, and the second is the one with the Bible, clothed with the light, the written word of Yahweh. Thus, symbolically, the first period may be called night, ruled by the moon, and the second day ruled by the sun. Therefore, the woman clothed with the sun and travailing with the child is the period after Israel went out of Egypt, and at that time the period without the Bible, moon, was passing away. We shall bring forth another proof from a different angle, making doubly sure of the idea that the woman represents both periods before and after Yahshua. Revelation 12:14 states, "And unto the woman were given two wings and a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place where she is nourished for a time and times and a half a time from the face of the serpent." Note that she was given two wings of a great eagle. If the wings were not symbolical, what their object? As the wings of the lion and the four-headed leopard of the Daniel 7 represented periods as previously explained on pages 33-34, then the two great wings must denote two great periods of church history, for the eagle being king of birds, and as it is emphasized that they were of a great eagle, it is evident that the symbol must apprehend each period from its beginning. Thus, one of the wings takes in the entire church history from the fall of Adam to the crucifixion of Yahshua, and the other from his crucifixion until the end of this world, his second coming. Thus, it proves that there is only one true congregation in all ages. Her crown of 12 stars originally represented the 12 patriarchs and later the 12 tribes after they went out of Egypt, at which time the wonderful light shining from the written word of the Yahweh, the Bible, clothed the church woman while she was travailing with the child, the promise of the Messiah. But the crown of the 12 stars in the New Testament period stands for the 12 apostles. Number 12 is a symbol of the government, for the Yahshua said unto them, "You also shall sit upon 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel." Matthew 19:28. This fact is proven by the types of the 12 tribes. It will be noticed that in the reckoning of the tribes of the spiritual Israel, the 144,000, by the type Israel after flesh, as in the Revelation 7:5-8, for the tribe of the Dan is missing, and instead the tribe of the Manasseh, the firstborn. son of the Joseph is numbered. The type corresponds perfectly with the antitype, for the Judas Iscariot, being one of the 12 apostles, was cast aside, and whom Dan is a figure, and in his stead Paul of the Tarsus was added, of whom Manasseh is a figure. Therefore, we see perfect harmony in the type and antitype. The lesson in this instance, that these unmistakable symbols teach that Yahweh has had only one congregation, one truth, and one way of salvation for all generations. The same is also expressed in the words of the Paul. There is one body and one spirit, even as you are called, and one hope of your calling, one master, one faith, one baptism, one Elohim and Father of all. Ephesians 4:4-6. For the Elohim's congregation has been symbolized also by earthly objects, for we speak of the symbols by the woman, namely Hagar and Sarah. The former is a symbol of the Jewish and the latter of the apostolic congregation. See the Shepherd Rod, Volume 1, page 136. These earthly symbols point out Elohim's congregation in the different sections and conditions. But the woman clothed with the sun and her eagle's wing, being of the heavenly origin, denotes Elohim's true church, truth in one continuous line, and her child, our only Savior and Redeemer in both periods, before and after the Yeshua. The crown of 12 stars in the New Testament period. John's vision in the 12th chapter of Revelation deals with two main subjects, namely the woman clothed with the sun and the red dragon. The latter has been explained. See pages 65-69. The symbol of the woman in the New Testament time covers three divisions. First, the apostolic period. Second, her absence from the civilization in the wilderness for 1260 days, years of papal persecution. Revelation 12:6-14. Third, the last period of the church while in conflict with the dragon. Revelation 12:15-17. The first and second period shall be explained in connection with another study. An explanation of the third period is found in the Shepherd Rod, Volume 1, page 151-152. Therefore, our intention is this chapter, is to be briefly visualized as the lesson taught by her crown of the 12 stars. We ask the question, who appointed these present-day self-styled apostolic authority? It is said that after the apostles passed away, another set of the same number have a right to the apostles. Suppose the claim is true. There are hundreds of churches, and if each one of them had 12 apostles, there would be a multiplicity of thousands of them at one time. And if that act had been repeated in every age, there would be an innumerable multitude of apostles at the appearance of Yahshua. If there had been thousands of apostles, it is evident by the following scripture that they shall never enter into the city of Yahweh as apostles. For the inspiration says, and the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and then the name of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. Revelation 21:14. What is the difference between an apostle and a minister of the gospel? If there is no difference, then there should have been more than 12 apostles in the early congregation. There were more than 12 engaged in the ministry. Yahshua had appointed 12, but Judas was counted out, leaving only 11. After Yahshua ascended on high, the 11 agreed to appoint another in Judas' place, and the lot fell upon Matthias, and he was numbered with the 11 apostles. The Acts 1:26. Therefore, they made up the number. Now, if Matthias took Judas' place, then there must be 13 such men, according to Romans 1:1. Paul, a servant of Yahshua Messiah, called to be an apostle, separated unto the gospel of Yahweh. Mark carefully that the woman's crown was only 12 stars, and in the foundation city there are only the names of the 12 apostles. Which one of the two, Matthias or Paul, is not recognized by him who laid the precious foundation of the holy city? If we say Paul, we make him a liar. If we say Matthias, then his ordination by the 11 had no effect in appointing an apostle. What then? In the Acts 1:26, it is the first and last we hear of Matthias, but not so of Paul. If Matthias is the apostle, then he surely is not as worthy as Paul. Which one of the ordinations would be most honorable? Is it Paul, by Yahshua himself, as he met him on the way to Damascus, or Matthias by the hands of the apostles? The question is clear. No man's hands are qualified to ordain an apostle, regardless of his high standing in connection with the gospel. The holy hands of Yahshua and his personal presence only can appoint one for such an office. This is an impeachable evidence, for the woman has a crown of only 12 stars. Therefore, he has the power to ordain another and thus multiply the stars. What is an apostle? Answer: one that is separated unto the gospel of the Yahweh. But if this is the only meaning of the title, then all who are engaged in the proclamation of the gospel, being separated, must be apostles. Therefore, the word apostle must have a special significance and a deeper meaning than simply separated unto the gospel of the Yahweh. For the apostle Paul was called to be an apostle for the Gentiles. Thus he, with the 11, became the earthly founders of the church of the Gentiles, and Yahshua the divine head. Speaking of the gifts in the church, apostles are the first. For without a founder, there would be no organization, thus the rest of the gifts follow. See 1 Corinthians 12:28. For the crown is her glory, and the stars, 12 apostles, are her only earthly authority. Here is a striking evidence that the present-day apostles are falsely so-called. A prophet may claim authority as a prophet, but never as an apostle. However, there is a difference between the prophets of the Old Testament and the ones of the New, the latter being under the authority of the former. In other words, he may be an interpreter or a revealer of the Bible. For all the prophets and the law, ceremonial and the type, prophesied until John, Matthew 11:13. For the interpretation is correct only when inspired by the same Spirit. Thus timely utterances are revealed. Not only do the annals of history prove this, but the Bible is very emphatic on the subject. For it plainly says that we are built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Yahshua Messiah himself being the chief cornerstone. Ephesians 2:20. Again we read, howbeit, when he, the Spirit of truth, is come, he will guide you into all truth. For he shall not speak of himself, but whatsoever he shall hear, that shall he speak, and he will show you things to come. John 16:13. Where is the need for such apostles? Are not the words of the apostles in the Bible? If we should appoint a set of such men, would we not set aside the woman and her 12-star crown? If we set aside the crown by voluntary election of the apostles, what will we do with the gospel committed unto the church by the Yahshua's ordained apostles? Hear the authority by the crown of the stars. But though we are an angel from heaven preaching the other gospel unto you, and that which we have preached unto you, let him be accursed, And we said before, so say I now again. If any man preach any other gospel unto you than that ye have received, let him be accursed. Genesis 1:8-9. For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of the Yahshua. 2 Corinthians 11:13. The world is filled with so-called apostles and sects of every kind. Is it not? It is time for Elohim's people to fall on their knees before their Creator and study the Scriptures for themselves, that they may know what is true. Why should one accept the decision of another? By so doing, we are robbed of an experience of our own. If so, may we not ask the question, what is the future outlook of the world? No one is saved because he may admit evidence of the truth or because he may belong unto the right church or creed. It is only by an experience of his own, based upon the evidences of the truth, received into the heart, that can renew the mind and regenerate the soul, so that he can walk in the newness of life. It is utterly impossible to enter into the kingdom of Yahshua without a personal touch of a divine glory. Yahshua said, "Verily, verily I say unto you, except a man be born again, he cannot see the kingdom of Yahweh." John 3:3. The following scripture bears the same evidence, for he is not a Jew which is one outwardly, neither is he is that circumcision which is outward in the flesh. But he is a Jew which is one inwardly, the circumcision is out of the heart, and the spirit, and not in the letter, whose praise is not a member of Yahweh. Romans 2:28-29. Circumcision is nothing, and uncircumcision is nothing, but the keeping of the commandment of Yahweh. 1 Corinthians 7:19. And rend your heart, not your garment. And turn unto the Yahweh your Elohim, for he is gracious and merciful, slow to anger, and of great kindness, and repenteth him of the evil. Joel 2:13. For they that are such serve not our Elohim Yahshua Messiah, but their own belly, and by good words and fair speeches deceive the hearts of the simple. Romans 16:18. Returning to our original thought, the 11 were allowed to perform the ordination of a path. For listen to this present day, with its new model religion showing that Elohim has committed to no man apostolic authority save to the 12. The commission to the ministry is, go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world. Matthew 28:19-20. So thou, O Son of Man, I have set thee a watchman unto the house of Israel. Therefore thou shalt hear the word at my mouth, and warn them for me. When I say unto the wicked, O wicked man, thou shalt surely die, if thou dost not speak to warn the wicked from his way, that wicked man shall die in his iniquity. But his blood will I require at thine hand, Ezekiel 33:7-8. In reality, the 12 stars on the woman's crown originally represented the 12 patriarchs. Later, the 12 tribes of the flesh of Israel, and after that, the 12 apostles, and last, the 12 tribes of the spiritual Israel, the 144,000. Thus, again, it proves number 4 to be an important number, and that by the woman, these 4 periods are represented. For Yahweh, who foresaw the selfishness of men, commanded the prophet to write the following. Ye eat the fat, and ye clothe you with the wool. You kill them that are fed, but ye feed not the flock. For disease have ye not strengthened, neither have ye healed that which was sick. Neither have ye bound up that which was broken. Neither have ye brought again that which was driven away. Neither have ye sought that which was lost, but with force and with cruelty have ye ruled them, and they were scattered, because there was no shepherd, and they became meat unto all the beasts of the field, when they were scattered. My sheep wandered through all the mountains, and upon every high hill. Yea, my flock was scattered upon all the face of the earth, and none did search or seek after them. Therefore, ye shepherds, hear the word of Yahweh. As I live, saith Yahweh Elohim, surely because my flock became a prey, and my flock became meat unto every beast of the field, because there was no shepherd, neither did my shepherds search for my flock, but the shepherds fed themselves, and fed not my flock. Therefore, O ye shepherds, hear the word of Yahweh. Thus saith Yahweh Elohim, behold, I am against the shepherds. Okay, he says, and I will require my flock at their hand, cause them to cease from feeding the flock, neither shall the shepherds feed themselves any more, for I will deliver my flock from their mouth, that they may not be meat for them. For thus saith Yahweh Elohim, behold, I even I will search my sheep and seek them out. Ezekiel 34:3-11. As a comparison, the Spirit of Yahweh drew a literal picture from the flock of sheep and shepherds. Yahweh's people as the flock and the ministry as the shepherd. Yahweh's true people will imitate the sheep, and his watchmen will imitate the good shepherd who cares for his sheep. Anything less than this is an abomination in Elohim's sight. If we are to learn the lesson intended, we must first acquire a clear understanding of the type shepherds and flocks for the antitype ministers and church members are asked to copy after the pattern. The picture is drawn from the ancient method of the herd and the flock. For the open pasture of the mountains and hills required the shepherd's continual care over the sheep. The vast territory drew the sheep and the shepherds a considerable distance from home, and the continual moving over the landscape made it impossible to obtain a permanent shelter and of any kind, for the sheep are shepherds. Consequently, other help was needed. Each shepherd had a certain number of dogs, depending on the size of the flock. For the safety of the sheep from man and beast, as one thing called for another, an ass was used to carry the necessary supplies for the sheep, dogs and shepherds. These consisted of clothing, night coverings, food for the shepherds, as well as for the dogs, medicine, bandages, and so forth. For the faithful animal carried the load on his back throughout each day of the year. At the end of the day, the shepherds counted his sheep. If one was missing, he went to search for it at once, as it was not safe for one to wander apart from the flock. For the extra condition of the sheep was the evidence of the shepherd's fidelity and worthiness of his hire. He not only had to seek good pasture, but act as veterinarian as well. Often a sheep would break its leg, and it was a shepherd's duty to skillfully sit, splinter, and bandage the wound. He traveled over the rough surface of the land where there were rocks and brush. Accidents were frequent. Sometimes a thorn would prick the flesh or other minor injury occur. That probably caused no pain and would not be noticed by the shepherd. Yet a fly might have deposited her eggs in the open sore, and larvae would soon develop and work their way under the skin and to the bone. This was a common occurrence. At such a time, the shepherd's attention is turned to the ailment of the sheep, and he must then give it special care and bandage the wound. When a lamb or even a sheep was sick and too weak to follow the flock, it was the shepherd's duty to care for and carry them. If he should have a lamb in his arms, and another sheep is constantly by his side gazing at and speaking unto it. These noble creatures care, feed, and keep their lamb spotlessly clean. Are you mothers doing as much for your children? Are you shepherds, ministers of the flock of Yahweh, doing all the ancient shepherd did for his sheep? Or do you feed and care for yourselves more than you do for the flock of Yahweh? Are you worthy of your hire? For the ancient shepherd had to give a complete account of the flock, even to the smallest detail. Do you think Yahweh will require less of you? Are not his sheep of much greater value? David risked his life for a lamb, but Elohim delivered him from the lion and the bear. David, for Yahweh's honor and for the safety of his people, and endangered his own life, faced the giant Goliath, but Elohim delivered the Philistine into the David's hands and made David king over his nation. Do you think he will do less for you? If you too imitate the good shepherd, Yahshua said, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep, but he that is an hireling and not the shepherd, whose own the sheep or not, seeth the wolf coming and leaveth the sheep and fleeth, and the wolf catches him and scattereth the sheep. The hireling fleeth because he is an hireling and careth not for the sheep. I am the good shepherd and know my sheep, and am known of mine. As the Father knoweth me, even so know I the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. John 10:11-15. The prophet Isaiah, looking forward to the present day conditions, says, yea, they are greedy dogs which can never have enough, and they are shepherds that cannot understand. They all look to their own way, every one for his gain, from his quarter. Isaiah 56:11. That ends the woman of Revelation 12. Let's go on now then to Revelation 13, the leopard-like beast. A nondescript beast in Daniel 7, representing Rome in his first stage, shows prophetically by his 10 horns that there were 10 kings to arise out of Rome. In his second stage, it is shown that the papacy was to arise, subdue 3 kings, and wear out the saints of the Most High for the space of 1260 years. But it tells not of the fall of the Roman monarch or the papacy. It is silent concerning the Reformation that came before or after 1798 A.D. Therefore, the lack of the information by the symbols of this beast must be found somewhere else in the prophetic word of Yahweh. This must be sought in the book of the Revelation, for it is the complement unto Daniel's prophecy. The leopard like beast of Revelation 13:1-10 is the only symbolical prophecy that tells of the fall of the Roman monarchy. The crowning of the 10 kings, the wound of the papacy, the Reformation and rise of the Protestantism, and the captivity of the Pope. And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, upon his heads the same name of blasphemy, Revelation 13:1. Note, this beast was the same number of horns as a nondescript in his first stage, Imperial Rome. Daniel says, the 10 horns on the beast representing Rome are 10 kings that shall arrive, Daniel 7:24. The horns symbolizing the Roman world and its imperial state also pointed forward to the time when the empire would be divided into 10 parts, or kingdom. In other words, while the horns primarily represented the Roman world in its imperial form, they secondarily denote the present world in its divided state since the fall of Rome, corresponding with the 10 toes on the great image of Daniel 2. Nondescript beast, in its first stage, has 10 horns. As in his second stage, the little horn came up and 3 of the 10 were plucked up by the roots, for it denotes that they can never be reinstated as kings. The horns being reduced to the biblical number 7 signified that the papacy was to have complete sway over the entire world as far as the Christian church is concerned. Therefore, the 10 horns on the leopard-like beast, Revelation 13:1, cannot signify that the 3 uprooted ones have assumed their authority the second time, as the same number of horns appear on each succeeding beast, namely the nondescript, Daniel 7:7, the leopard-like, Revelation 13:1, and the scholars call it Revelation 17:3, representing the entire New Testament era. It is evident by the facts gathered that the number of horns are intended to denote universal, as they are absent from the beast of Revelation 13:11-18. It verifies the fact that the two-horned beast denotes a local system. Therefore, it is unquestionably clear that the fixed number of horns, 10, are designed to universally symbolize the peoples and governments. Follow the chart on page 84. Insomuch as the lion, the bear, the four-headed leopard, and the nondescript beast, the symbols of Babylon, Medo-Persia, Grecia, and Rome, are linked to each other. The unbreakable chain of the beasts make it impossible for another universal beast system to intersect their consecutive order. Consequently, the leopard-like beast of Revelation 13:1-9 must follow the nondescript beast of Rome. Revelation 13:2-3. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered after the beast. The composition of the beast reveals the fact that he is a descendant from the four beasts before him. The mouth of a lion, the feet of a bear, the body of a leopard, and the number of horns all point back to his hereditary characteristics as descending from Babylon, Medo, Persia, Grecia, and Rome. The indisputable fact proves that he is the fifth universal beast. Okay, it says, the leopard-like beast arises out of the sea in the same manner as the four beasts before it, Daniel 7:3. Therefore, the beast of Revelation 13:1-9 is created from the result of war and commotion among the nations, in the same manner as Babylon, Medo, Persia, Grecia, and Rome, since the evidence revealed by the symbol cannot be questioned. The leopard-like beast assumes the period after the fall of Imperial Rome, corresponding to the feet and toes, iron and clay of the great image in Daniel 2. In other words, the leopard-like beast arrives at the closing period represented by the first stage of the nondescript beast, while the second stage of the latter, Papal Rome, continues up to 1798. Consequently, the unfolding process of the one overlaps the downward course of the other. To John, the leopard-like beast was shown not in its unfolding process, but rather in its closing act. For he says, and his deadly wound was healed. He saw in vision the beast after the deadly wound had been healed, for he used the past tense, was. But in Daniel's vision, the work of the nondescript beast was all in the future. Said the prophet, and he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and law. He shall be given into his hand until the time and time is divided of time. Daniel 7:25. Daniel in vision viewed the history represented by the beast forward, while John looked backward, or in other words, Daniel saw what the beast was to do, while John was shown what the beast had done. Okay, the crowns and the horns. Of the beast having seven heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, John said, I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death. The wounded head represents the papacy, wounded by Martin Luther, which was originally symbolized by the horn head of the nondescript beast, showing only the papal power and the authority. But the leopard-like shows the papacy in her wounded state and the imprisonment of the Pope. Thus the two beasts, the nondescript and the leopard-like, overlap each other from the fall of Imperial Rome to 1798. Therefore, while the nondescript beast in its second stage represents the papacy, she is secondarily described by the leopard-like. The one reveals its tyrannical authority and the others describe her downfall. For the little horn was to have power and wear out the saints of the Most High for 1260 years, Daniel 7:25. But the leopard-like also opened his mouth in blasphemy, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months, Revelation 13:6. In fact, the number of months is equivalent to time and times and the dividing of time, 1260 days, (years), figuring 30 days to the month. with the imprisonment of the Pope Pius VI and his death on August 19, 1799, a certain transaction occurred between the nondescript and the leopard-like beast. The head and horns were removed from one to the other, so to speak. In making the change, the little horn, having the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things, was transposed from horn head to a common wounded head, showing that papacy had lost her ecclesiastical authority and was no longer represented by a horn head. Combination of church and state. As that event terminated the prophetic period of the 1260 years of Daniel 7:25 and Revelation 13:5, it completely crowned the horns of the leopard-like beast, signifying that the state is now independent of the church. The crowns on his horns denote the fall of the Roman monarchy, showing that the 10 kings, which were symbolized by the 10 horns of the nondescript beast, have received their kingdom. Horns and heads all present. I, John, saw the beast having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns. Let us not overlook the fact that all horns, crowns, and heads are present on the beast. Therefore, whatever meaning is derived by the symbol, all must be in existence at the time his deadly wound is healed. Had it not been so, the symbols of the heads and horns would have come one after another, as it was the little horn and the other three that were plucked up from the nondescript beast, Daniel 7:7. A similar method is observed with the he-goat. After the notable horn, Alexander, was broken off, 4 came up to take his place, the 4 divisions of the Grecia, and after these things the exceeding great horn, which primarily represented Rome, Daniel 8:8-9. This brings in verse 5 this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call, and that's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close this now with a song. How beautiful heaven must be. We read of a place that's called heaven. It's made for the pure and the free. These truths the author he has forgiven. A beautiful heaven must be. A beautiful heaven must be. Sweet home of the happy and free. Fair haven of rest for the weary. A beautiful heaven must be. The waters of laughter are flowing, and all who are drinking the deep clean. The jewels of the splendor are flowing. A beautiful heaven must be. A beautiful heaven must be. Sweet home of the happy and free. A haven of rest for the weary. A beautiful heaven must be. For the angels so sweetly are singing. A bird by the beautiful sea. Sweet chords from their blowhawks are ringing. A beautiful heaven must be. A beautiful heaven must be. Sweet home of the happy and free. Faith in a breast for the weary. A beautiful heaven must be.